Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top trade sales for June 2014. We're recording this a little bit later than usual, about probably, frankly, 2 weeks later than usual, because I went to Comic-Con right after these numbers came out. And I had a great time, Chris. You should have come.
I know. I'm totally jealous. So,
But you're probably much more rested than I am.
I'm very well rested. Yeah, in fact, it was very quiet around my house this past because my son was in Rhode Island, so very quiet. So I went to go see Guardians of the Galaxy by myself. It was very, very nice.
I've got to go see that.
You have to go see it.
That's on my list. My sister wants to see it.
Yeah,
and we'll probably do an episode on that.
Yeah. It was good. I don't know. You know, everybody says like the latest movie is their favorite and everything. I still think Captain America: The Winter Soldier is my favorite. But you know, it's what's great about these movies is that they're just all different from each other, even though they share the same universe. You know, Captain America is war and espionage, and Thor is more fantasy. This one is science fiction. You know, so you can have your favorite movie. There's no problem with that, which is really nice.
Well, and they're doing a good world-building aspect. I think they have very successfully translated the spirit of the Marvel Universe to film.
Yeah, they have, yeah.
And I think it's funny because I think DC is successfully converting a lot of, or translating a lot of their stuff to television.
Mm-hmm.
We have yet to see them kind of really take off on the films. Granted, they've had some big successes with the Batman trilogy and some other stuff.
Well, and I think there's no doubt that they've done a better job with their animated movies and shows.
You know, speaking of the animated stuff, one of the things that was a pleasant surprise is I hadn't met any of the guys on the podcasting panel prior to doing it, other than John Suntress, the guy who organizes it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys who was on it, Heath, wrote Justice League War, the animated feature.
I didn't know that.
So that was a pleasure talking to him. John did a great job moderating and... got a really great group of panelists this time. You know, we got somebody from NPR, somebody from Publishers Weekly, and then, you know, Heath, who does a podcast and writes some of the animated films and stuff like that. It was just fun stuff.
Mm.
The June and July numbers are always kind of tough for me to really analyze, I don't say properly, but the way I'd like to, because of Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
Both in terms of when they come out before and after, the amount of material that comes out during this, and just the amount of news, and sometimes just the way the industry kind of pivots this time of year. You know, I talked with Ron a little bit over at Image,
mm-hmm.
and we've noticed both on the trade side and also on the monthly side, Image has really stepped up their game over the last year or so. You know, you've got Saga, you've got East of West, obviously you've got... Walking Dead going gangbusters. Image is very much on the upswing creatively, and it's reflected in the sales.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, they had their Image Expo right before Con. All of that stuff, the announcements they made there for some new titles. It's just a very kind of exciting time of year in general for comics. And, you know, I look at the crowds, I look at the chaos, the pandemonium, and just the general excitement at Comic-Con. And then I come and look at some of these sales figures, which are not quite as exciting or impressive sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting juxtaposition because the Marvel booth, really it's the Marvel Studios booth, packed. A lot of activity. DC, I would say this year, officially turned the corner from being a DC Comics booth and is now a DC Entertainment booth.
Okay.
They had, you know, costumes from the movies. They had a lot of the video game stuff. Obviously, a lot of the Batman 75th anniversary. And there was obviously quite a bit of comics in the booth as well. But it was more look at the movie memorabilia-ish sort of stuff. I mean, they had people who had decorated capes and cowls and stuff like that. They had artists do that. And they seemed to be taking a page from Marvel's playbook there.
Right.
versus before, it was very much focused more on the comic centric with the TV, the movies, the cartoons and stuff. But at this point, what I felt was the focus shifted a bit.
Yeah. Well, that's how you attract a crowd, and that's how you get pictures taken of all the memorabilia and shared around on social media. And yeah, that's right. What Marvel has been doing for many, many years now that I've seen at C2E2. And mm-hmm. I've even saw that to an extent at, you know, Comic-Con when I was there in 2006, when I met you.
Yeah.
You know, Marvel always has had a much bigger presence as far as media goes. But even back then in 2006, you know, they still were in the midst of doing their, you know, Spider-Man movies and the X-Men movies. And now they've just kind of parlayed that up into the Avengers movies and still with Spider-Man and X-Men, really.
But if you roll the clock a little further back, go to like 2001, 2002.
Yeah.
It was a Marvel Comics booth.
Sure.
Signings. It was on the about the comics. And the last year they did that booth, and I forget which year it was a ghost town.
Mm.
And by that I mean not even were Marvel people there.
Yeah.
Which is part of why it was a ghost town. There was nobody to go sign stuff.
Yeah.
Then they spent 1 year in the corner of the Diamond booth. Then they were off the floor for a couple of years. Then they started coming back with the movies and that stuff. And it's a sign of the times. That's what people are going to Comic-Con for.
Yeah, and well, specifically Comic-Con International. I mean, that is a show unlike any other, and you know that. Yeah.
Well, it's like you said, it's what gets people in the door, so to speak. And now it's up to the publishers, the retailers, the creators to translate this overwhelming popularity, acceptance, and frankly, success of these properties, be it superhero, be it supernatural, be it, you know, Western or sci-fi or whatever the genre, translate that into actual comic book sales. Because, I mean, in terms of movie and television stuff, we've got iZombie, Constantine, that's clearly Vertigo stuff. Mm-hmm. The Hercules movie based on the Radical comic came out during Con. You've got Arrow, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Flash on TV. You've also got the Netflix stuff coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention all of the movies. Guardians of the Galaxy just opened, things like mm-hmm. that. There's a lot of opportunity for people who are aware of these properties. Let's see if we can move them into, I don't know, reading in some form or another.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's going to be trivial or easy to do. But whatever company really cracks the code for that first has a huge opportunity, because there are literally millions of people watching these TV shows, movies, video games, etc., that are not buying comics.
Mm-hmm.
So it's both an exciting time of year for me and, frankly, a slightly depressing and tiring time of year just because of how much walking I do during Con, but also realizing a lot of these, there's a lot of great stories that have motivated these other translations and versions of these characters that people just aren't availing themselves of.
Right.
So.
Well, if any company is doing it right, I think it's being done by Marvel right now for sure. Just because the sheer volume of material that they've got coming out in movies and TV.
They've got it coming out, but you would. And maybe it's happening in the mass market or digitally, but in the numbers we're looking at,
mm-hmm.
total units Marvel had for trades in June was 67,541. And some of those are still sitting on store shelves, obviously.
Right.
You would think with Winter Soldier, with Guardians coming out, with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on TV, they might be able to get a little more momentum into the trades. You know, so I think they're grooming a huge potential audience, but again, actualizing that into sales hasn't really seemed to happen yet. But it's a nice problem to have, having your material so widely accepted, even if they're not doing it in the original form.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bad thing.
Yeah.
So we talked about Marvel a little. DC, frankly, kind of blew that out of the water. Marvel had 20.64% of the total units sold for the top trades. DC had 33.55%, which equated to 109,790 units. So well over 42,000 more units. Now, coming in not far behind Marvel was Image with 18.28% of the total units, which works out to about 59 1,829 units. So Image obviously has had a strong trade program for ages with Walking Dead, Chew, and a number of other things.
Right.
They're strong now on the monthly side. I talked a little with Ron Randall, their
Ron Richards.
Ron Richards. I'm thinking, you're right. I confused him with the artist. I am so bad with names.
You're Ron still Richards. Getting over Con. It's okay.
Yeah.
I'll forgive you.
I talked with him briefly on the last day. He was doing good. And again, not only do they have the material, they're getting it marketed well, getting the word out, and it's working. You know, there's still a couple of things here and there I think Image maybe should do a little differently or whatever, but they've got probably the most diverse lineup of material. They've got an incredibly strong backlist in terms of the trades. And they've got, you know, Walking Dead, the only comic that's really growing in sales. I'm looking forward to, you know, probably before Comic-Con next year, being able to say that Walking Dead is the best-selling ongoing comic book series out there.
Yeah, probably.
You know, we're not far from that. So in terms of the breakdown of the top trades and such, really, I don't think any major surprises. Archie did fairly well with about 4.3%. Dark Horse had 7.03%. A couple other publishers, IDW, Viz, Random House, Boom, Avatar, had above 1%. Obviously, a lot of these guys had below 1% just because of, you know, you only put a trade or two out. It's hard to really get too much momentum behind that.
Yeah, well, Archie had the Afterlife with Archie Volume 1 trade paperback come out, so I think that really helped their momentum for sure.
Let's talk about that one. Have you read that?
No, I read the first issue. I've not read the rest of them. I'm waiting to get this trade paperback, actually.
All right, you've read more of it than I have. This topped the list with 11,733 units. And it's a $17.99 trade, which is a good price point. For Archie to top the trade list is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Because it's something that so often is just, oh yeah, they still exist, but people forget about them in the mass in the direct market. Most of their activity is in the mass market there. But I think they've also been aggressively going after some different types of storylines, trying to make Archie relevant again.
Yeah.
And it's working.
Well, they did the Married Life, they did the Kevin Keller stuff, and now they're doing Afterlife, which is great. So yeah, they are being very diverse, you're right, people are talking about Archie, which is a lot of fun. So
it's something that it was easy to write off for a while, just as, oh yeah, it's dated, whatever, and they've combated that very successfully. You know, I am cautiously optimistic about the Black Circle stuff they're going to do.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I was really enjoying what they'd been doing with the Red Circle characters, and frankly, I felt they kind of dropped the ball with the new Crusaders. And for them to essentially say, no, we're going to revamp everything and do the Black Circle version of these.
Now, what do they mean? They mean by that, make them a little more darker in tone, right? A little more noirish, or?
I don't know if it's so much noirish, but I take it as a little more serious, a little, I don't say, darker, yes, but not dark.
Okay.
Because what I really enjoyed about the new Crusaders stuff they did was it was very much an all-ages comic in kind of the 80s DC, you know, Marvel sort of a sense. You know, it was accessible to teenagers. It wouldn't bore an adult to tears or anything. It could be taken seriously. It had a little bit of depth. It wasn't shallow, but it wasn't deep. You know, you wouldn't confuse it with Vertigo for anything, you know? I haven't really been reading up all the articles and stuff on what's going to happen with Black Circle, you know, being traveling in Comic-Con and all, which is ironic. I go to Comic-Con and I'm more out of touch with what's going on with comics. It's so weird. But I think they're going to try to do, the gist I get is frankly, try to compete with Marvel and DC. You know, go for more, skew a little older age group, not much, but, you know, more towards the older high school, college, you know, adult age versus more the high school, junior high age that, if there was a target audience, was more, I guess, the Red Circle stuff. Again, it was truly all ages. So the fact that the new Crusaders stuff is kind of I guess getting abandoned, it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
Leaves a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth because it's like I was invested in that and they kind of dropped the ball. But if they're going to replace it with something that's really cool and really good, I'll probably get over it pretty quick.
When does this launch?
Excellent question. I am not sure.
Okay.
Soon-ish.
Keep an eye on it then.
Yeah. It's something that it may not be in the September previews, but maybe the October, November. I honestly don't know.
Okay.
But it's definitely something I'm going to be keeping an eye on because I think there's some fun characters. And, you know, again, if they can make Archie relevant again, some of the stuff they could do with the superhero stuff could be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll definitely keep an eye out for that for sure.
Second item on the list, Night of the Living Deadpool trade paperback. A bit of a gap between number two and number one. This did 5,432 units. So there is a gap of, what, 6,300?
Yep, looks like it.
So pretty big jump there. I read the Night of the Living Deadpool miniseries, and it was a lot of fun.
Really?
It.
I don't know, you're a Deadpool fan.
I've been reading the character since it came out, and I am not what I would consider a hardcore Deadpool fan.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a lot of runs that I think are good, but not, oh my God, where a lot of people are thinking, oh my God, it's brilliant. The stuff they're doing these days, across the board, is really good stuff.
Okay.
Now, keep in mind, I'm about, frankly, almost a month behind on my reading right now. So I haven't read, I've only read the first issue of Deadpool versus X-Force, haven't read the Dracula series he's got, and I'm an issue or so behind on the ongoing. But by and large, they're doing some really good stuff with the character. It's fun, it's accessible, it's in the spirit and style and tone of the older stuff,
mm-hmm.
but I think appeals to a wider audience. It's working for me, whereas some of the other stuff was a near miss, if you will. It's like I could see why other people love it, but I wasn't. I was liking it, but not, you know. Whereas this, some of what they're doing is just a ton of fun.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, and as far as I know, hardcore Deadpool fans are still loving it, but I could be wrong on that. Obviously, you know, getting number two on the list, pretty good. The basic gist here is he wakes up and goes through the Walking Dead process, if you will.
Mm.
You know, he takes the place of, I'm blanking on the lead name.
Rick?
Of Rick, thank you. I'm doing horrible with names tonight. you know, wakes up in the hospital and it goes from there. You know, so there are a lot of things that if you're not well steeped in The Walking Dead and in zombie movies in particular, some of the jokes might get lost on you. Certainly some of the zombie movie jokes were lost on me.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole thing was really well done. They did some cool stuff with the use of color because most of it was black and white except Deadpool.
Oh, that's cool.
So artistically, it was really good. Strong art, and it was just a really good story. So not surprised it did well. Yeah.
See, excellent.
Next up, we've got Velvet number one trade paperback. This is from Image. It did 5,388. This is, Image really is, you know, has that and then volume three of Saga, volume one of Saga. I mean, volume two of Saga is down at rank 10. So all three volumes of Saga in the top 10 for the trades this month for Image. If Velvet continues the trend that some of their other more recent releases have done, the backlist for Image is just going to get stronger and stronger and stronger. You know, you've got Walking Dead that's doing great, Chew that's almost a perennial and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Saga, of course, as we see, three volumes here. If Velvet can continue that, and I see no reason it wouldn't, a year from now, 2 years from now, if this trend continues, Image's backlist is just going to be a juggernaut. Across the board, not just with Walking Dead and Kirkman.
Right.
Have you read, you're reading Velvet, right?
I am not reading Velvet. I am waiting for did the hardcover already come out? I can't remember, but I am going to probably get all these, because, you know, they do those really nice, like, double-sized deluxe hardcovers. That's uh-huh. probably really what I'm waiting for. So, in fact, you know, I'm sitting here at my little desk here, and I've got in front of me the Sleeper Omnibus and the Ed Brubaker Incognito Omnibus, which is really nice. And they're both wrapped in plastic, and I probably could sell them for a pretty penny on eBay.
Or you could read them.
Or I could read them.
I vote for the reading.
Well, actually, you know what? My Sleeper Omnibus, yeah, it's actually coming apart, the cellophane on it, so I do have to read it. There's a nice scratch on the back of it, too. Great.
Ooh, that's not fun.
No. So, no, I do have to read it all, though. I hear nothing but good things.
It's really fun stuff.
Is it?
Yeah, definitely recommend that. I'm liking Saga as well, but a lot of people are just head over heels for it, and I'm not there. You know, again, I like it. Yeah. I don't love it like some people.
I read that first issue when it came out, and I'm just not that, I don't care about the graphic art in it.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't really care for the story. I mean, it's just not selling it to me, at least the first issue. I've always said I have to go back and reread it. And actually, I'm glad you brought this one up, because while you were at Comic-Con, I don't know if you got this information from Ron, but they released the hardcover cover, and it is the breastfeeding cover is going to be right there for the cover of this hardcover coming out. So
I feel at times with Saga, they're almost doing the shock jock approach to marketing.
Yeah, that's kind of what they're doing. And I really don't think anybody cares over there, which is fine. That's their prerogative.
Let me clarify. When I say that, I don't mean that Ron and the marketing people are doing this. I think
no.
It's Fiona and the creative team that are...
Right. I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You open the cover to this, a little bit more graphic, hey, surprise kind of content,
mm-hmm.
And it seems...
But, it could be worse. There's really nothing wrong with breastfeeding. You could have a cover of, we were just talking about Deadpool.
Yeah.
Look at the graphic violence in those books. So what would you rather have? Subtle nudity or graphic violence? So,
And again, I'm not saying the covers are where I think they do the shock jock kind of mentality. What I'm noticing is a couple of times the opening first page of the story.
Yeah.
Is kind of an attempt to shock you with, hey, look at what we can do.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm glad they have the creative freedom to do that. I'm also glad they've got enough of a story behind it and inside
right.
of the covers and stuff beyond just the shocking first page they sometimes do mm-hmm. to hold it up.
If you want more shocking covers, just pick up any Zenoscope book these days. Look at those covers. Come on. There's more cheesecake in that than what we're seeing in, Saga these days.
I would say the most shocking image I've seen was the image they've been using for The Strain. I find the one with the eye thoroughly disgusting, and that's about as much as I'm willing to discuss it. I'm very squeamish, and that was on trolleys and buses in San Diego.
Oh, really?
And I'm like, that's not cool. So, again, I'm squeamish. It didn't work for me. I'm sure if anyone's wondering, they can go Google it. I would just, be careful who you do that around.
Exactly. Yes.
So next on the list, Superior Spider-Man Volume 6, Goblin Nation, that I think rounds out most of the Superior stuff.
I think that's about it.
Up until they restart Superior soon with issue 33 or whatever. Again, great run on that title. Not surprised it placed pretty well. That one did 4,320 units, and then we've got a couple entries from DC on the list. Batman and Robin, Death of the Family, trade paperback. That one did 3,594. Then we've got first the trade for Injustice Gods Among Us Volume 1 with 3,463, immediately followed by the hardcover Volume 2 of Injustice Gods Among Us with 3,331 units. Injustice Gods Among Us, sleeper hit.
Yeah.
That was one that was, again, based on a video game, very nominally, and Tom Taylor just did some really good stories in there that just nudged the characters further and further and further to you. You're like, wait a sec, they're doing what now?
Mm-hmm.
In a very believable manner. Now, based on the latest previews, they're doing, I think, two issues in an annual and maybe gearing up for a third, quote-unquote, season of the title.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. How long is this going to be going on? Was this ever planned as an ongoing or just a volume one just based off the video game and it's just gotten legs and taken off?
I think it was we'll do it as a quote-unquote ongoing and it goes as it goes.
Yeah.
And it took off.
Yeah.
And then they realized it was taking off, and that because it was continuing to number, people weren't getting on, so they said, okay, let's cut it and do a season two with a new number one to get people on board.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, it could go really either way. I don't think the second season has been as strong as the first run that these collect.
Okay.
Because there was just some great stuff in the first volume. And the second is good. It's moving a little slower. It's only got like two of the digital components versus the first season tended to have three. So the pacing's a little different. And I think there may be a little more editorial oversight maybe on this. And that's just a guess based on how popular it's become. That may not be helping it. But yeah, this is something that I think was done because there's a video game. Let's just do a title based on it. The author, again, Tom Taylor, the writer, did some cool stuff and it took off.
Mm-hmm.
So sleeper hit, good stuff. Definitely recommend that. Not surprised it placed in the top 10.
Yeah, this volume two collects Gods Among Us 7 through 12 and Injustice Gods Among Us Annual.
And then from there, I think it flipped over to after that to the second season.
The second season. Okay, so volume one, volume two is the first season.
It's what was known as Injustice Gods Among Us.
Okay,
then it turned into a new series of either Injustice Year 2 or Injustice Gods Among Us Year 2.
Okay.
With a new number one. That's going for about 12 or 13 issues in an annual. And then I'm wondering, and maybe they will, maybe they won't, flip that to like a year 3.
Oh, got it. Okay.
I'm not sure. Again, DC is taking a number of things out of Marvel's playbook.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them they're being front and center about. Some of them they're trying off on the side to see if it works. This is one of them where they did the relaunch that way just to see how it works. I mean, I have no idea why they did it, obviously. Mm-hmm. But since they did that, they've done that sort of a relaunch with Titans, with Suicide Squad. So I think they're starting to go with that approach a little more and more. And if it's working, why not? So, interesting stuff.
You're right. There is it's year two. Yep. Year two. Year one, year two. And then I don't know what they're on, actually.
I think they're up to 12 or 13 in the solicits.
Okay.
But I actually don't have my previews within arm's reach at the moment.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't know.
So.
You're right. It's called Injustice Year Two. You're right.
Well, about halfway through, they seem to switch it in the solicits to Injustice Gods Among Us Year 2.
Okay.
I know this because I'm trying to clean the data to do the issue-to-issue comparison stuff.
Oh, you're right. Injustice. Yeah, I'm looking at Comic Book DB. It's all messed up. Yeah, Injustice.
Well, on Comic Book DB, it's going to be a little more confusing because
it is
got
more
both
confusing.
The
yes.
Digital and the print listed.
That's exactly what's confusing me. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they usually put on Comic Book DB like a Roman numeral 1 or 2 behind the title, as if they were both in the same format, if you will.
That's what they're doing, yep.
And I would think what they ought to move towards, and this would be a change for them, have some sort of indication that this is digital first or it's imprint first.
Yep.
And that would help differentiate those two titles.
Yeah, you know, just pick up the trade.
Yeah, that would do it too.
Pretty much. Yeah, that is kind of confusing looking on here. It is.
Well, and that's one of the challenges these days with doing any kind of cataloging or whatnot of comics is the recycling of titles, new volumes and such, the digital first versus print first.
Yep.
I went to the digital panel that Calvin from Publishers Weekly moderated.
Okay.
And it was interesting because I don't really consider myself a digital reader, but as they were going down the panel and introducing people, I'm like, well, I've read his stuff, I've read his stuff, I've read his stuff, I've read his stuff. I mean, not for everybody, but for a lot more than I had expected.
Because
they had people there for New Paradigm, for Watson and Holmes.
Okay.
And Liberator was another one. So there was a lot more that I was familiar with than I had expected. And a lot of it I had read in print when it finally got there. And there was some talk about the digital reluctance and how some people, like myself, still want the tangible aspect.
Right.
And again, fascinating, fascinating discussion. That's the kind of thing that I really enjoy about places like Comic-Con, is you get a bunch of people just talking about various aspects of this. I mean, the whole concept that basically everybody has a digital device by and large.
Yeah.
I mean, I was at a tech conference the week prior to San Diego Comic-Con, and one of the presentations there was just giving some stats on the proliferation of iOS devices and Android devices, mainly in terms of smartphone, but also including tablets and such.
Mm-hmm.
And there are more of these devices coming online every day than there are people being born.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And that's each iOS and also Android.
Mm-hmm.
So our digital widgets are outnumbering us 2-1 on that score.
My, you know, I'm in advertising and I'm in digital advertising, and one of my clients, major multi-billion-dollar corporation,
mm-hmm.
is intent on, you know, what can we do from a mobile perspective, from a smartphone and tablet perspective. And, you know, they've got a great website. It's a responsive design. And, you know, it's like, but more and more people and more of their users are using it as a handheld device first before they are going to their computer, you know, their desktop or even their laptop. You know, so what can we do to aid the user with their website in that manner? So it's an ongoing issue, and it's, you know, every day something new happens, whether it be from, you know, Google or Yahoo or Bing or
yeah.
something like that, or new technology comes out or a new platform or even a new device. You know, I mean, just look at the smartphones now, John. I mean, everything, you know, so.
Well, either a new technology or a new way of thinking about the technology.
Yeah.
You know, hey, if you do this programming approach, it changes the game this way.
Yeah.
You know, and the guy's point at the tech conference was very much, if you're doing something on the web and you're not thinking mobile first, you're doing it wrong.
You're doing it wrong, yeah.
And it's funny because I was sitting through that discussion, which was not heavily attended. It was a... building a mobile competency center at your company or some such.
Mm-hmm.
More because I was curious and there was no other thing that I wanted to go to more at that hour. Mm-hmm. And I was interested in what was that presenter was doing following that, which he did a great job on the following panel too. But, you know, I was sitting there actually going through the order form trying to figure out what my DCBS picks were going to be for the month. And doing that and listening, kind of, you know, splitting my attention a little bit. When he was sitting there putting up those charts on how the smartphones and the tablets are just so wildly adopted and stuff, I'm sitting here thinking, wow, this is a complete game changer for comics, much more so than I had fully realized.
Right.
Because all of this stuff, and the term that was used in the Publisher Weekly panel was second run versus digital first. You know, some of this is stuff that, for all intents and purposes, Batman is a second run in terms of digital. It's being done for print.
Mm-hmm.
It's also going out same day and date on digital. But that's different than a digital first, like Injustice Gods Among Us,
mm-hmm.
or some such. And when you realize just how quickly the iOS and Android platforms have been adopted, the differing screen resolutions on the Android one versus the very finite ones on the iOS and whatnot, you start to realize, oh, this is why people, developers are gravitating more towards the iOS. It's got less variables and oddities to deal with. Then they'll go to Android, and just how big of a market that is.
Mm-hmm.
The potential for comics is amazing. And digital sales are still going up. My understanding is they went up 29% last year,
mm-hmm.
which is the lowest they've gone up since really it started a couple of years back. So are we plateauing? Are we not? But the size of that audience continues to grow by leaps and bounds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, it may be one person with five devices, but
yeah,
still five devices, you know?
Well, digital is one thing, but I still am a print guy, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
And
same here.
I said I was going to bring something up before we got on. So did you happen to go to the Golden Age of Classic Comic Collections panel on Friday?
No, I did not.
Did you know about this panel? Because if you knew about this panel, I bet you would have been there.
I honestly, I skimmed through the program listing before going, but because of the tech conference and
yep.
some other stuff, Like crunching the numbers and whatnot that we're talking about. I didn't go through it as deeply this year as I might have and should have. So
I did not skim the panels either, and I usually do that to skim them all to see what I'm missing. For whatever reason, I just never got around to. I saw the panel that you were on.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't scan it for anything else, so I completely missed this. And if I knew this panel was going on, John, damn it, I would have found a plane ticket to go out and see this panel.
Really?
This panel was done on Friday from 11 to 12, the Golden Age of Classic Comic Collections. Now, check this out. This was moderated by the president of IDW, Greg Goldstein. And on the panel was Craig Yeo, who is a comic book historian with mm-hmm. Yeo Books, vice president of book trade sales at Dark Horse Comics, Michael Martins, the founder of Sunday Press Books, Pete Maresca, publisher of Fantagraphics, Eric Reynolds, IDW senior editor of Special Projects, Scott Dunbier, and then a late addition was Dean Mullaney from the Library of American Comics.
Mm-hmm.
Now then, Craig has been on my show, Pete has been on my show, and Dean has been on my show, and Eric and Scott and I have emailed numerous times over the years. So these guys were like, you know, these are the guys that speak to me and speak to my audience at my podcast. I mean, mm-hmm. this is it. And when I found out about this, I was embarrassed that I didn't even know about this thing, because I saw it on Craig's Facebook post and I said, please God, tell me somebody recorded this thing. And IDW did. And I'm so happy. And I listened to it the other day. In fact, when I was emailing you, I said I'd listen to the comic mm-hmm. book podcaster when I actually was listening to this one at work. this is just a fantastic panel. It goes into why these guys do what they do with the old collections, who the audience is for, why they pick out these. They talked a lot about Peanuts because that seemed to be the big, you know, the big get by mm-hmm. Fantagraphics, and they're wrapping it up. But there's a lot more to do with all these. They all announced new projects, you know, the IDW Artist Editions, everything, stuff that everybody's kind of heard of by now. But just like you were talking about digital, these guys were talking about it's so hard to pick and choose their projects because they have a slim window to do this. They only have so much money they can spend on reproduction rights. They go into this thing blindly, of not even knowing how many units they're going to sell. For example, Dick Tracy is up to volume 17. So, you know, and they were saying, you know, you get it. So you're on volume 17 for something like this, and you do three a year, right? So by the time you have like a 10-year-old kid is now 17 years old, or even a 17-year-old kid is out of college and can afford this stuff, a lot of these books are going to be out of print because they started when he was 18 and now he's 25, and, or, you know, he gets a good job when he's 25 and now he's 32.
Well,
he just can't afford it. You know,
it's funny because people either age into that audience or age out of that audience.
And that's what they're talking about. And so what Eric was saying regarding Peanuts is, and one of the questions are like, are you going to keep this stuff in print? And they're like, well, we're going to go to a trade paperback. The hardcovers though are going to be hard to keep in print. There is a demand, but it's like they get 5 emails a month. They need an email of 500 a month to justify it, you know. And we see that in the numbers at how much they sell. And so it's just they do it really for the love of what they, you know, for the love of the medium. And one guy asks, you know, the panel, you know, how do you guys pick? And Craig's like, I pick what I want to see reprinted. You know, there's no way two ways about it. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I think Pete says, you know, yeah, I love the Little Nemo stuff. That's why I do Little Nemo. And he's like, but it's really hard to find this stuff. And, Dean was talking about the Superman dailies getting reprinted that we've seen lately. And he said there is one guy in the world that has saved all of the daily strips of Superman. And that's who he gets his stuff from. I mean, think about that for a minute. This stuff would be completely lost in time if it wasn't for these collectors, you know, newspaper prints.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how hard it is to get this out. And granted, you know, you would think that DC would have this stuff, but they just don't. You know, nobody thought to collect this stuff way back when. So,
I know how many comics are coming out these days that I'm getting.
Yeah.
And, you know, you figure you've got a company like DC or Marvel or, you know, even Valiant or Dark Horse or Image or Boom or Dynamite. And, you know, okay, fine. We're only coming out with a couple of books a week at some of the smaller ones or a few dozen, you know, dozen or so at DC or Marvel every week. Great. Then the following week and add month after month, year after year. Even if they had started initially accumulating those, they're going to get worn out because people are going to use them as reference. They're going to get lost. They're going to get moved. They're going to get damaged. They're going to run out of space.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know that. You know that.
Oh, yeah. I because of, you know, when the numbers came out, 4th of July, the tech conference and stuff, I'm sitting here and on my desk, I've got four short box lids, upside down or, you know, whatever. One holding the comics from the week of July 9th, July 16th, July 23rd, and July 30th. So I've got a full month of comics here, and that's around 200 comics for me.
Jeez.
And I've read a lot of the 9th, maybe a few of the 16th. Haven't touched. Well, I've read three of the 23rd. I just reviewed those Sunday night to go up last night, or yesterday morning, and Monday, or this morning actually, Monday. Jeez, I am recording more episodes in a row, both before the convention and now after the convention. I'm getting confused. It's actually kind of funny. But yeah, these companies didn't think initially to be hanging on to the stuff, and even if they had, the logistics and practicalities of it make it really hard.
Yeah.
You know, and then add a few decades to that, and it's insane. You know, what gets me is I walk the floor of San Diego, I see the interest in the material, the properties, the characters, the number of people in cosplay on some of this stuff, and then we're just now getting out of the top 10 of what we've talked about for the month of June.
Yeah.
And we're right around 3,200 or so units in sales, give or take. And depending how many physical stores there are, that's not even a copy per store.
Right.
And I'm going to argue it is not a copy per store. And part of why I'm going to do that is one of the things I did coming back from San Diego is, again, I had to record Sunday night for the episode that just went up this morning on Monday, where we talked about Storm, Supreme Blue Rose, and the Star-Spangled War Stories number one. And I knew I would be getting back home late Saturday after the UPS store that takes my packages closed, so I wouldn't have those until I got them today after the episode went up. So it's like, well, I got to buy these on the way home. We swung by a Best Buy to go pick something else up. Right next to it was a Hastings, and I'm like, I want to walk into Hastings. My sister's like, okay. And it was one of the ones that has comics. Because remember a couple of years ago, there was the big to-do about how Hastings was essentially going to overnight become the largest comic book chain in the country?
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
They have. Okay. Now, at this particular location, and I took a couple of photos. I'll try to remember to put them up on the forum at some point. And if I don't, somebody remind me. They've got, it was one of the bigger comics things they've got at their stores. Two front and back things of new comics. They had some back issues. They had some trades. Would this really be something that what we would consider an average comic book, real comic book store, I hate to use that term, but you know what I mean, a standalone comic book store, would they consider this a huge threat or whatever? Well, if it's right next door, yeah, certainly. But, you know, compared to most of the stores I've been in, it's a little bit of a drop in the bucket. The stacks aren't that deep. There aren't that many. They're all full cover displays, which I thought was awesome. They do a lot of pre-order stuff, so it's, you know, you want to pre-order, it'll kick in. And if it's something they've got to special order, it'll kick in 2 months because, again, they're pre-ordering. Otherwise, if they can pull it off the rack, they will, I guess. But, I mean, talk about something that could have and may have been a real game changer for comics in terms of just more physical locations. Obviously, not every one of these Hastings is going to carry every one of these trades that we're talking about. That just wouldn't work. I didn't take a close enough look at their back issue selection to know if it was just leftovers. I didn't really, because I was only in there for about 10 minutes tops, just because we had to get moving to get on the road to make it to the San Antonio convention in time. But it opens up comics and trades to that many more people. And certainly these things up at the top of the list, Night of the Living Deadpool, Saga, Superior Spider-Man, that kind of stuff, I would expect that they get in enough copies to sate the initial demand and then just kind of go from there. Not having seen any huge impact, positive or negative, when this happened, made me wonder how well it went for Hastings, but they're still doing it. The person I talked to at this location seemed to think it was a very good move for them to add comics. It's done well for them. This was Las Cruces, which is a university town at that neck of the woods. It makes me question if we would have seen some serious attrition or drops in sales on trades and monthlies had Hastings not gotten into the market. Could they have been a quiet saving influence in the industry is my question.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea.
I don't know. Yeah.
I'm going to see if I can do a little digging around and get some insight into that. But it was cool just walking into one and kind of stumbling across kind of a stealth comic book store, you know, in the middle of something that has novels, music, video games, DVDs and such. Talk about a wonderful place to try to cross sell people from one entertainment form to another based on the same properties. Huge, huge opportunities there.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
But, you know, it's that many more, you know, physical locations. And I forget how many they were planning on putting it in, but, you know, I would be surprised if they're not the chain with the most physical locations.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are other places that have more business and more sales through them. You know, either a DCBS, Jim Hanley's Universe, Mile High Comics, and a few of the other places that are just, you know, massive in terms of volume of sales.
I don't think we have a Hastings in Michigan. I know I've never been in one, so.
There's one up in Round Rock, but it doesn't seem to be a comic location. The ones in San Marcos and New Braunfels, which are between San Antonio and Austin, mm-hmm. along I-35, both are locations, and I think they said some of the bigger ones. But by the time my sister and I finished up at the San Antonio convention, had a fun dinner with Derek from the Comics Alternative, and then started the drive to Austin, which is an hour and a half, we were pretty tired because we'd been on the road for about 2 weeks by that point. So yeah. we decided not to go swing by those two. But at some point, they're an easy drive for me to go do because it's probably a 45-minute drive from my house. You know, I just need to have a little bit of time on a weekend and get up and go to get up and go. But I want to see if I can hunt down somebody from Hastings a little higher up the corporate chain. And they had a booth at San Antonio, so I did give them my card to see what comes of that. Because I would like to talk to somebody and just see how has this worked out for them. You know, have there been challenges? Has it worked out as you expected? Better, worse, different? You know, I think there's a lot that can be learned from it. So, but that's where I picked up the comics I reviewed for the episode that went up this morning as we record this.
Okay.
And again, it was funny. I just pulled off the rack, Marvel, a DC, and an Image book. Took me a little bit to find the DC one because it was Star Spangled War Stories, but it was filed under D for DC, I think. The way the cover read, it made sense. Top 300 or so for June. What else looks of particular interest to you?
I had one on the list, and it was at rank 66 for $100. It is Dark Horse's Frank Miller's Big Damn Sin City, 1,424 units. I was at the comic book store the other day, John, and this was behind the shelf, and it was up on the top shelf, and I looked at it, and I'm like, man, that thing is going to come crashing down on the girl who was working the register. This thing is huge. And so I asked Jen, the girl behind the counter, I'm like, you know, can I take a look at that? And she's like, sure. And she takes it down, and man, this thing is, it is Big Damn Sin City, John. I don't know if you had a chance to get this in your hands.
No.
But this is one of the biggest books I've ever seen. I mean, thickness-wise. I mean, it's just giant. And it puts the Thor omnibus to shame, you know. This thing's just, it's tall, it's thick, it's heavy. And I was asking her, I'm like, you know, have you sold any? She's like, yeah, she sold two. She got three in the store, it's the last one. But we're kind of joking, you know, and she knows I do my podcast and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, how is anybody going to read this? You know, and the truth is you don't.
Yeah.
You buy it for, you keep it in plastic. You keep it wrapped up. You never open it. You know, there's no need to. You keep it for whatever reason, you know, sell it in 5-10 years.
Radiation shield. It's probably thick enough.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, anybody who, you know, takes the plastic off, sits down on their couch on a Saturday night is in for a big surprise, man. Because I'm like, this thing, the spine would crack, you know? I mean, seriously. I mean, even on the Death of Superman omnibus that was released earlier, I mean, that thing is thick, too. I mean, those books are, some of these books are just way too big, and they don't need to even be opened once.
I don't remember which booth I was walking by. I'm pretty sure it had to be San Diego. I'm certain it was San Diego, not San Antonio.
Yeah.
But it was one of the ones on one of the end caps, I think along the center aisle in San Diego. I'm going around it, and it's mainly a back issue dealer, but they had a couple of those uber thick hardcovers. And some of these are like 3-4 inches tall.
Yeah.
Just with the page count that it's like, this had to be, you know, thousands of pages. And I'm like,
yeah,
I'm never going to buy something like that because I'm afraid if I pick it up, my arm will snap right off just due to the weight. The practicality of those things, I question. The value of those things, I don't, because typically the page count you get for the price, it's like, damn.
Well, exactly. But not only that, I mean, you and I know we've been doing this show for 7 years now or longer. And, I've been doing my podcast. You've been talking about trades your whole time in comics. We know why these are published. These are published for the special collector, you know, uber high market. There is a market for these, as we plainly see. I mean, 1,400 people pre-ordered this book, you know, with more out in the wild right now. People are buying this thing. And there's a reason why Dark Horse released this book in time for the second movie coming out. There's no doubt about it, with promotion of that. But, you know, Sin City is also a well-known commodity. It's it's an evergreen property that is never going to go out of print as far as Dark Horse is concerned. They're always going to be republishing the trade paperbacks, the hardcovers in some sort of format, you know. And this is just their forte into the omnibus market with something like that. Now, you recall that several years ago, they did the Sin City Library, which is two slipcases of 4 volumes each, one of which the volumes was The Art of Sin City. Mm-hmm. I have those. Those were $150 each. So really, you're getting a bargain here for $100 for everything, or for the library editions for $300. So who's the idiot? I'm the idiot, really, right? Well, for spending $300 on it.
It comes to, why are you getting some of these things? If you just really love the material, you want it in kind of a showcase, showroom presentation, something that's just, ooh, wow, that's impressive. I can totally see doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got a couple of the absolutes for that very reason. Mm-hmm. The bigger page size is awesome, but also just the look at this, it's impressive, is kind of cool too. Mm-hmm. You know, some of this, if you're just getting to read, you're going to gravitate towards maybe an essential or a showcase, or not, if you want the color and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's cool that they do the different versions of some of the stuff, but I will admit there are times where I think, from my vantage point, some of this is a little more expensive than I personally can justify, or a bit bigger and heavier than I think I could comfortably lift, much less read.
Yeah. Oh, there's some ego involved in getting this thing, too. I mean, it's something you show off on your shelf, for sure. You know, it's something you take a picture of and put it on your blog to say, I have this. There's no doubt, you know. But
and there's a time and a place for that. But
there is.
I haven't gotten into that sort of a thing. Note the lack of photos I've got, you know.
Right. But no, I just wanted to mention that book because I'm always interested in the super high-end deluxe volumes, which always fascinate me. And, you know, I've got several of them. So, you know, I'm not going to get this one. But, you know, I thought to myself, you know, I was driving home after talking with Jen about the library editions compared to this one. And she said, yeah, the library editions are completely out of print. You know, I think volume one is $400. And in the second slipcase is $300. So right there, you know, you're priced out. And so there's no other real way to get all of this in one volume. So I was thinking to myself, you know, if I didn't own the library editions or if I didn't own the trade paperbacks, would I plunk down $100 for this, which seems pretty reasonable, John? You know, it doesn't seem like that much money.
For what you're getting, it's not.
It's not. It's a good deal. It's just you're getting this deal in, you know, 1,700 pages. It's going to crush your knees, you know?
Again, some of the collections I was seeing in San Diego in terms of the thickness of them.
Yeah.
It's like, insane.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you've got a story and it's got that page count, and then, I mean, there are certain things that I think justify that format, others not so much.
Yeah.
You know.
And if we really want to read these, you could probably pick them up digitally for a lot less than $100.
Certainly it's a lot lighter that way.
It's a lot, yeah, just bring up your iPad for, you know, a couple ounces.
Now, one thing I want to ask you about, on the off chance you know anything about it, this is something that really got onto my radar in San Diego, is at rank 24 is Attack on Titan No Regrets Volume 1 graphic novel. 2,344 units. Now, while I was at San Diego, I was seeing a lot of people in costume. It's mm-hmm. you know, it's probably only about a percentage of the attendees, but you know, it's still quite a few people. And I kept seeing these people in this one kind of a thing, this one logo with a white leaf with a blue leaf or feather kind of a wing thing behind it. And I'm like, I have no idea what that's for. So finally, I'm at over by Artist Alley. It's by the styling, the t-shirt booth that's, you know, 8 stories tall or what have you. And I see that, so I go over to the people. It's like, okay, that one there, what is that from? And they're like, oh, I don't know. So they pull it down, they look at it. Oh, it's from Attack on Titan. I'm like, thank you. You know, because I was seeing so many people in costumes related to that, that it's like, okay, this has a fan base. What is it? Do you know anything about this?
I pulled it up on Amazon right now. I know nothing about this.
When I was in San Antonio, I saw a couple of more people in that sort of an outfit and saw the thing and mentioned it. And Derek's daughter was there, and she mentioned, oh, yeah, it's Attack on Titan. It's great. It's this, it's that. So, you know, it's something that I think I may check out just based on it's popular, so maybe it's good.
Mm-hmm.
And again, at rank 24 on the list, that's not too bad. And
that's pretty good.
So if any listener out there knows anything on this or a good entry ramp, be it in terms of manga or anime or something, please let me know.
Now, you've got it as Random House, but it's Kodansha on Amazon.
We
know Kodansha does very well, yeah.
It's got a vendor code of RAN.
Okay.
Which Diamond says is Random House.
Now, Kodansha, no, it's probably is. It might be the American publisher or distributor. Yeah, but Kodansha. And we've seen Kodansha on the list many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, definitely a publisher that has got, you know, some history to it.
And again, when I see that many people cosplaying a particular thing, it tells me it's got some serious fans and some serious traction.
This, yeah, this has got a lot of history. I see Attack on Titan number 12, Attack on Titan Before the Fall number 1. Yeah, there are a few different Attack on Titan. So this is, yeah, it looks like it's been around a while.
I don't really recall having seen you see the feather logo with what you're looking at or whatever?
Yes, I do. It's on the, yeah, it is. There it is.
Like the blue and white wing feather kind of, a, you know, whatever look.
Yep.
It's a cool logo. It's nice looking.
Yeah.
It's memorable. I don't recall really having seen that in past years at Comic-Con. Not
yeah,
to say it
cool.
wasn't there, but it wasn't there to this level. So that was interesting.
Attack on Titan. There's a big manga, light novel, anime, video games. It was a live action film. Live action film announced in production in 2011. It should be coming out 2015. Okay.
Interesting.
Oh, 2 films. Oh, okay. Yeah. So yeah, looks like it's been out for a while.
You know, it's one of those things that I get a ton of stuff, but I know that I don't get anywhere near, but like maybe 10% of what's out there. And there's a lot of stuff that just hasn't hit my radar.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm always on the lookout out for new things that could be cool and could be interesting.
14 volumes of the manga.
Wow.
And then Attack on Titan, 4 volumes, Before the Fall, 2 volumes. There's quite a bit, it looks like. So, several video games too.
Cool.
Huh. You know, I have not read a whole lot of manga. I'm going to check this out. I am making it a point to read a little Attack on Titan and see what it's all about.
Let me know which one you do, and shoot me an email on that. Maybe we'll do an episode on it.
Might start just do the first one. Dark Fantasy Post-Apocalyptic. So there you go.
All right, then.
Okay.
So, a couple above that, X-Men Days of Future Past, trade paperback, reorder activity, 2,695. Obviously, I think the movie had a little bit to do with that.
The hardcover's on the list, too, at the bottom.
Is it? I didn't...
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I'll have to do a search for it, but it's on there. I did see it. Future Past.
Yes, it is. It's down at rank 281.
281. There you go.
So that's another 416 units. This is one of those cases where there's kind of a clear go-to thing in terms of you know where the movie could drive somebody to. It's different enough than the movie, though, that, I mean, again, we're talking, I think, 3,111 or so total units between the trade and the hardcover this month.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, there are other collections, other ways to read this and get this. This is one of those things where, by and large, when you've got a movie, even one that does as well as the X-Men stuff, it doesn't really seem to move the needle that seriously compared to the size of the audience that caught the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that. That makes sense to me. Not everyone who loves the film is going to say, I'm going to go start reading.
Right.
You know? One of the comments Calvin made during the publisher's weekly panel that kind of caught my eye or caught my ear was he referred to the culture of reading.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I'm not going to say he's biased because he works at a place called Publishers Weekly, which implies a reading culture. But, you know, it's I certainly hope what that alludes to is true. I would love to believe that. But then I see some of these sales numbers in terms of the comics, the trades, and stuff like that. And I don't think we're as much of a reading culture as, you know, we could be, should be, or at least are compared to, you know, other cultures.
Right. I agree with that. Yeah, it's definitely changed. I'll tell you this, though. My reading habit has changed. I finally got back into books after a long, long time of just reading comics and a few light novels here and there. But mm-hmm. I finally got back into Audible. And I've been mentioning this on my podcast throughout the summer, really, I have been. And, you know, I've got a 45-minute commute to work.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
And so I jump in the car, download the whatever book I want to read, listen to it in the car, and then at lunchtime, I've told you this, John. I work at a football stadium mm-hmm. in Detroit, the football stadium at Ford Field.
Say, how many are there in Detroit?
Yeah, how many are there? So I work at the Lions Stadium, which is kind of fun, and I walk the concourse at lunchtime. I have my lunch and I go around it. You go around the concourse twice. It's 1 mile. It's 1 mile walk. So I usually go around two or three times in any given day, and that's usually enough. Then I got to go back to work. Half hour lunch and then walk around. It takes about a half hour or so, three times around. It's perfect. And, I'll throw the headphones on, and I'm not alone. There's several people walking the concourse with me, you know. And but it's just a great way to read and catch up and everything. Now, I will say at my desk, I'll probably listen to, you know, light music. I'll listen to classical music or a little bit of light jazz or something like that, or even occasional podcast here and there just for background, because mm-hmm. I actually do have to get some work done. So I can't really concentrate on what's going on in a book. But for a podcast, it's just kind of background noise, and you can usually get back to the conversation at hand, especially when they're talking about comics.
Yeah.
So it's a little easier. I listen to, you know, your podcast or 11 o'clock comics or, you know, Adam Carolla's podcast for some comedy throughout the day or something like that. But, you know, but when it's, reading the book, though, it's definitely in my car going for a walk or even working out on the treadmill at home or something like that. And that's really how I've been reading. And then reading these days, and then with my comics, I'll still read my comics. But
it's funny because I used to go through prose novels at an alarming rate.
Yeah.
When I was traveling for work and stuff a couple of jobs ago, I at times was going through almost a novel a day.
Oh my God.
Well, if you're flying cross country or transatlantic, yeah. Trans-Pacific, you got time for a couple of books.
Well, and you train yourself to read faster and with more intensity too.
Well, not even a matter of training. I tend to read, at that point, I was reading Star Trek novels, science fiction, stuff that was fast reads.
Yeah.
Not, oh my God, I've got to study and dissect this and reread the paragraph to really understand it. I read for entertainment, not for memorization or any such stuff. But, you know, you're in a hotel room and got nothing better to do in the evening after a day of meetings and stuff. It's a great way to relax. But you know, I've fallen off that wagon. The number of novels, entertainment novels I've read over the last couple of years was All You Need Is Kill, which is the basis for Edge of Tomorrow that my sister and I did an episode on. Great, great novel. Recommend that. One of the Star Trek temporal shoot, I forget the name of the time, the people who chase down the time anomalies. I just don't read that many novels these days. But what I have done is similar to you, is you get an audiobook, and I've done this for Wisdom of Crowds, Tipping Point, Outliers, Getting Things Done, other things of that ilk. Listen to them in the car back and forth, takes a couple of days, whatever, boom, I've gotten it done.
You should listen to the Steve Jobs biography by Isaacson.
I should. I've got
That was
the
my first one I did, and it was
hardcover. I've heard good things about the audio one too.
fantastic. Yeah, it's long, but it's well worth it. It's great.
The other one I'm thinking about doing, if I do audiobooks, is the first Harry Dresden book, because that's read by James Marsters, and he's been doing it for 10 years. And somebody at the San Antonio convention asked him, "Well, how come?" It's like, "'Cause they're really good." Okay. I mean, that's the cool thing is there's so much great stuff to read and enjoy that just finding sometimes inventive ways to find the time to do it is a challenge.
Right. And that's, another thing that I'm doing is, I spend a lot of money on my comics, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of money on a book. And I read the book once, I throw it on my shelf. This way, I've got it in an Audible format. I have it in a digital format. I can take it with me wherever I go. Just throw on some headphones. It's with my phone. It's awesome. It's so great. And then I also like my comics, I switch up the genres every, often. I've been, doing a biography. I did Princess of Mars. I went back and did the very first one. That was a lot of fun. I'm reading the John Grisham book right now. It's just really, really great to switch it all up. And I've got so many books in my queue that I want to read now. Because you go through Audible and or Amazon and you say, "Oh, this, I want to do this. I want to do that." And I'm, so much out there. So yeah, there's no shortage, that's for sure.
Well, and again, that's the thing with not only audiobooks but comics or whatever, is there is something out there for everybody.
Absolutely.
And if you can't find it, you just need some help in searching for it. You got to figure out what sort of thing you want to be reading, listening to, or partaking of, and find like-minded individuals, and they will help you find it. It's kind of astounding to me just the diversity of material out there, in terms of original content and, for lack of a better term, kind of secondary, I don't say derivative, but supplementary content. Again, what we're doing for comics is supplementary content to comics, both in terms of this discussion, the reviews, the talk about trades you do, all that kind of stuff. So the better somebody is at identifying what they're liking and why, the easier it is to go find other things to scratch that itch.
And hopefully we do that here on our show.
Hope so.
Talk about a variety of books here.
I mean, that's part of what I enjoy about kind of looking at the numbers is I know what works for me. I know what doesn't work for me. I read a fair amount of the content, more on the comic side than the trade side, but even with everything that gets collected, I'm sure I've read a fair amount of what's on the top trades list this time around. And then seeing how it sells in comparison to what I thought of the material. Some cases it does much better, other cases it does much worse. But it's always interesting to be able to put that into some kind of a context that way, and again to see what's really popular that hasn't hit my radar, because there's just so much stuff out there.
Yes.
So, is there anything else that the sales just really surprised you by, or anything of that sort that we want to talk about?
No, I think I'm good. I just wanted to bring up that the one Sin City book. What about you? Anything else?
There's a couple of Harley Quinn trades a little further down the list, doing a couple hundred units. But by and large, Actually, there's another Attack on Titan down near the bottom of the list there. It ranked.
Now, you're a Harley Quinn fan, right? You like the character.
I like the character.
What do you think of her new 52 in the series so far?
Actually, Drew and I are going to review number 8, and part of why we picked that is this book is doing gangbusters.
Mm-hmm.
In June, it was actually, I believe, let me double check this so I'm getting this right. It was the second best-selling book for DC, number 7.
Wow.
At 93,266 units. Now, part of that was up quite a bit because of the Bombshell cover, Poison Ivy crossing over, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But it is doing phenomenally well. I actually talked to Chad Harden at San Diego. His booth in Artist Alley was opposite of the booth of a couple of friends of mine. So it's like, hey, this thing's doing gangbusters. You're the artist. What do you think? You know, he's like, well, it's well written. It's well done. You know, obviously his art's astounding.
Right.
But he was saying how with the scripts and stuff, if the creative team is going out of their way, it's like, well, this has been done. Let's do something else. Oh, that's been done. Let's do something else. They're trying to be new, inventive, and original. There's a done-in-one component. She's a cool character. There's so many things, but that's part of why when Drew and I were last night trying to figure out what to do for some upcoming episodes, it's like, you know, that one's coming out. Let's talk about that one. Let's see if we can get some thoughts put together as to why it's doing so well. Because it's good. Is it the second best thing DC's doing? Or fourth best even? Maybe, I don't know. You know, I think DC's got a number of other things that are really damn good. But again, the only thing beating it out from DC in terms of sales that in this month of June is Batman. Something's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think quite a few somethings probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're going to review that and, like I said, see what we think. And Chad is a great guy to talk with.
Oh, that'll be great.
Chatted with him a little at San Diego, yeah. So, in terms of price points, $14.99 was the most popular this time around with 56 items. $19.99, just a little behind it with only 42 items. Then 28 items at $24.99, 25 at $9.99. So that was a very popular price point. And 23 items at $16.99. So, you know, definitely there are a couple of price points that are very popular. The majority of the top 300 are $17.99 or under. Once you factor in, really, you know, 75% of it are the, actually, 80, almost 85% are at, oh, hang on, 85.33% are at $25 or less.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, most of it is gearing towards the lower priced items, which I think is good. There are still a few big ticket items. One at a buck or 125. One at 100. We talked about that one. Four at the $99.99. Four at $75. But I'm happy that they're aiming more towards the more affordable and getting things out into more hands than just can they cash in with the more prestige and fancier versions. Granted, there's time and a place for those too. Mm-hmm. My wallet often doesn't have room for them. So what do you got coming up on your show?
Coming up on my show, I don't know when this is going to be published, but I do plan on having Steve Bryant, who does Athena Voltaire, come on the show. Cool. He's got that new Athena Voltaire hardcover coming out through Dark Horse, which is great for Steve. But I will say, anybody who's interested in Guardians of the Galaxy, come by my show. I did a kind of a reprint recap of the comic book a couple of weeks ago. And then last week, I did my Comic-Con wrap-up of all things that were announced at Comic-Con in collected edition or reprint form. So
quick question,
come on by and check it out. Yeah.
Quick question on the Guardians episode. With the Marvel Digital Unlimited stuff, have you been tracking which of the back issues to read are available through that or not? In other words, if somebody really loved the movie and has that subscription, do you have any idea what percentage of the ones would be on that or not?
That, no, I don't know. I did go through, basically, I mean, everything's listed for trade paperbacks on ComicBookDB or comics.org or something like that. So that's kind of what I did a rundown of. And also, you know, a lot of things are collected in twice. So I did, you know, not only did I do the current incarnation of the Guardians and, you know, how they came about to be through Annihilation, Annihilation Conquest, mm-hmm. and that whole storyline from 1998, but also how they were first launched with the Guardians back in 1969, 1970, and then also where each of the main characters of the movie, where their first appearances were and where you can find those.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a coworker or two that I know have the Marvel Digital Unlimited subscription thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just thinking that's another way people are going to be reading some of this. So if there's an easy way, and there may or may not be, to find out how much of that is available that way, that'd be cool.
Yeah. So, well, definitely. Yeah, that is something, you know, I would just go on the Unlimited and find out, or even, you know, everything's on Comixology. I did take a look at that. So
true.
Yeah. What about you, man? What's coming up on your show besides Harley Quinn?
Oh, man. We're doing Harley Quinn. We're doing Secret Avengers. We're doing Doctor Who, the 11th and 10th Doctors.
Oh, cool.
Technically, I was just realizing those came out on the week of the 23rd. We're going to do them for the week of the 30th because there were alternate covers that came out. And when we were picking, it's like, well, that looks like fun. So we've made the decision, and I think we're going to stick with it because it's a good chance to go review both copies, or both Doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Titan launching both of those concurrently is an interesting choice. And then following it up with the 12th Doctor. I am hoping they do some not so much miniseries, but some other sporadic stuff with the other Doctors, mm-hmm. Just because I think it'd be fun.
Mm-hmm.
So we got that. We've got, let's see, as we record this, but right before this goes up, so this will go up on Friday. On the Wednesday before this, 2 days from now as we record this, time travel is so confusing, is going to be the write-up of the San Antonio, not the write-up, the podcast on the San Antonio convention that I did with my sister. That was a lot of fun. Then the preview spotlight will be going up. Then the Mayo Report comics, and then it'll be about time for us to get back together for the July numbers.
Yeah.
Because Comic-Con slowed me down enough on this that those are going to be coming out any day now. So got that stuff coming up. At some point in the future, I'll have an Orphan Black episode that I recorded with some friends at Comic-Con. My sister and I have talked about doing an episode of Guardians of the Galaxy. We drove through Monument Valley on the way back, so we're thinking we may rewatch the John Carter movie and do that, because it was filmed over there. So a lot of ideas. It just comes down to finding the time to get some of this done. And the other thing I've got coming up is I've got about, 200 comics here waiting to be read. So there's that, too. So plenty to keep me busy.
Excellent.
Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that'll do it, man.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themayoreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or a few scanned items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond.
No information about sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath logic and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.